I can just barely see the side of Bo's face, and his temple pulses, rain spilling off his chin. "Was it you?" he asks with gravel in his voice, taking a single swift step forward and pressing the blade against Olivia's stomach. He might just gut her right here if she gives him the wrong answer. He wants his vengeance, even if it means spilling her blood instead of forcing her over the railing. Murder instead of suicide. Again, Olivia smiles, eyes swaying over to me as if she were bored. She can see it in my face, in the tense outline of the real me hovering beneath Penny's skin. Marguerite is my sister, after all. She knows me, can read the truth better than anyone. "Of course not," she answers sweetly to Beau. "But you should ask your girlfriend. Maybe she knows who it was." I feel my chest seize up, ribs closing in around my heart and lungs, making it hard to draw in air and pump blood to my brain. "Don't," I say too softly, hardly loud enough for her to hear. "You probably want to know why I brought all those people to your island, why I wanted the summer solstice to happen here." I don't respond, even though I do want to know. "I wanted you to see that no matter what we do, no matter how many times we steal a body and pretend that we are one of them, we never will be. We're their enemies. They hate us. And if given the chance, they will kill us." She nods her head at Beau, as if he were the proof. "You have been playing house for too long, too many summers in that body. You think you have friends here. You think you could make a real life in this town. You think that you can fall in love, as if you were entitled to it." She sneers, left eyebrow raised, and even though the rain cascades down her face, she still looks beautiful. "But they only like you because they don't know what you really are. If they did, they would hate you, despise you. They'd want you dead." She says this last word as if it tastes like metal. "He," she flashes her gaze at Beau, "would want you dead." The knife is still pressed to her belly, but she leans into it, staring at Beau. "Ask your girlfriend what her real name is." My heart stops completely. My eyes blur over. "No, please," I want to beg. "Don't do this. Don't ruin everything." "She's been lying to you," she adds. "Go ahead. Ask her." Beau turns just enough to look me in the eye where I'm pressed up against the wall of the lighthouse, palms flattened against the stone. "It doesn't change anything," I start to say, trying to keep the truth from spilling up to the surface.
"Doesn't change what?"
he asks. "How I feel about you. How you feel. You know me." "What the hell are you talking about?" Olivia's smirk reaches her eyes. She's enjoying this. This is what she's wanted all along. For me to realize that we can't change what we are. We're killers. And I can never have Beau. Not like this, in this body. The only way a swan sister can truly keep someone is by drowning them, trapping their soul in the sea with us. "My name isn't Penny," I say, the confession ripping at my insides. My lips quiver, rainwater dripping over them and catching on my tongue. The knife in his hand starts to lower. His gaze cuts through me. The realization of what's coming next is already settling into his eyes. "My name is Hazel." He shakes his head a fraction of an inch. The knife is now lowered at his side, his mouth forming a hard, unyielding line. "Hazel Swan," I concede. His eyes sway briefly, and his jawline tightens. And then he goes perfectly still, like he's solidified into a statue right in front of me. I should have told you before, but I didn't know how. And then when I found out why you came here, I knew you'd hate me. And I just couldn't...
When?
He asks matter-of-factly. When? I repeat, not sure what he means.
When did you stop being Penny Talbot?
I try to swallow, but my body rejects the motion, as if Penny's body and mine are battling each other, fighting for control. The first night we met, I brush a wet clump of hair away from my forehead. After the swan party on the beach, Penny brought you back to the island. That night, she woke from sleep and came down to the dock before sunrise. It was a dream to her. She waded into the water, and I took her body.
So that night on the beach, when we talked by the bonfire and you told me about the Swan Sisters, that was Penny, not you?
I nod.
But everything after that night has been you?
Again, I nod.
But you remembered talking to me on the beach and things about Penny's life.
I absorb the memories of the body I inhabit. I know everything about Penny.
That's not the only reason, Olivia chimes in, happy to fill in the holes I'd like to avoid.
I close my eyes, then open them. Beau has turned fully away from Olivia and is now staring at me. I'm the threat now. I've hurt him, lied to him, made him trust me and even love me. I've taken Penny's body every summer for the last 3 years, I confess. A blast of wind barrels into us, sending a surge of rain against the windows of the lighthouse.
Why?
Beau manages to ask, though his voice sounds strangled. I like her life, I say, the first time I've admitted it aloud. I like being here on the island.
Oh, Hazel, if you're going to tell the truth, you might as well tell him everything, Olivia interjects. I shoot daggers at her, wishing she'd just shut up. I should have let Beau push her over the edge. I shouldn't have stopped him. But now, here she stands, bringing up every lurid detail of my past, and calling me by my real name.
I used to come here when I was still...
alive. Olivia finishes for me, raising both eyebrows.
You lived here before? Beau asks.
No. I don't want to tell him about Owen, about my life before. It doesn't matter now. I'm not that girl anymore. That girl drowned in the harbor 2 centuries ago. And this girl is here, alive, right in front of him. The first lighthouse keeper had a son, Olivia fills in for me. His name was Owen Clement. He was handsome, I'll give him that. But I never understood what she saw in him. He had no money, no estate, no lucrative future. Yet she loved him anyway. And she was going to marry him. That is, if his father hadn't accused us of being witches and drowned us in the harbor. I cringe at her sharp account of Owen and me, as if it could be summed up so crisply. A single breath to tell our story. Now Owen is buried up on Alder Hill in Sparrow Cemetery. That's where she went this morning, to his grave. She says it like an accusation, like I have betrayed Beau with this single act. And maybe I have. But it's not the worst offense, not by a mile. Beau looks stunned. He's staring at me like I have ripped his heart from his chest, squeezed it between my clawed fingers, and crushed it until it stopped pumping. Where he once saw a girl, he now sees a monster. It wasn't like that, I say. I went to say goodbye to him. But my words seem frail and ineffectual. They don't mean anything anymore. Not to him. So you see, Beau, Olivia continues, hair whirling about her face, Marguerite Swan grinning and swaying beneath her skin as if she were suspended in midair. Your sweet Penny is not who she says she is. She is a murderer like me, like Aurora, her sisters. And she only comes back to this island because it reminds her of the boy she used to love. And if you think you care about her, love her even, you might want to consider that she is a swan sister, and seducing boys is what we do. You might only love her because she has spun a spell to make you think you do. It's not real. Olivia licks her lips. That's not true, I bark. Oh, no? Perhaps you should tell him about his brother. Tell him how good you are at seducing unsuspecting outsiders. My knees buckle. I dig my fingernails into the wall of the lighthouse to keep from collapsing. I can't do this. What was your brother's name? Olivia ponders. It doesn't matter. I'm sure you resemble each other. And how could my sister resist the chance to seduce two brothers? It's just so perfect. Stop it, I tell her. But Beau has taken a step back against the railing, and it rattles beneath him. His hair is soaked, his clothes soaked. We all look like we've been swimming in the ocean, drenched, the three of us trapped together on this walkway, caught by the wind in whatever fate has brought us here to this point. Centuries of deceit now tearing me apart. The truth more painful than anything I've ever felt. Even more painful than drowning. Was it you? Beau asks. The way he says it feels like he's just thrust the knife straight into my gut. I didn't know at first, I say, fighting through the heat of tears that push against the rim of my eyes. But when you told me what happened to your brother, I started to remember him. You look so much alike. I clear my throat. I didn't want to believe it. I was different last summer. I didn't care whose life I took. I didn't care about anything. But I do now. You helped me see that. I don't want to hurt anyone anymore, especially not you. This entire time, you knew I was trying to figure out who killed him. He gets tangled up on the words. Then he finds them again. It was you? I'm sorry. Another breath. He looks away, not even listening to me anymore. This is why you could see what Gigi really is. And Olivia? His eyes shift to look at Olivia and then me, like he's trying to see what lies inside us. You could see them because you're one of them? Beau, I plead, my voice sounding weak. You drowned my brother, he says, and he takes one quick step forward and locks his body around mine. His breath is low and shallow, and he brings the knife up to my throat, pressing it just beneath my chin. My eyelids flutter. I lean my head back against the wall. His gaze tears through me, not with lust, but with rage. And I sense in the fury pumping through his stare, through his fingertips where they hold the knife, that he wants to kill me. Olivia's eyes flash to the doorway. This is her chance to flee. But for some reason she stays. Maybe she wants to see him slit my throat. Or maybe she just wants to see how this plays out. How many have you killed this year? Beau asks, like he's looking for another reason to slide the blade across my throat and let the life drain out of me. None, I mutter. My brother was the last one. I nod, just barely. Why? I don't want to be that person anymore. My voice is a whisper. But it's what you are, he spits back. No, I shake my head. It's not. I can't do it anymore. I won't. I want a different life. I wanted it with you. Don't do that, he says. I try to clear my throat, but I'm shaking too badly. Don't act like I changed you. Don't act like you care about me, he says. I can't trust anything you've said. I can't even trust how I feel about you. These last words sting the worst, and I grimace. He thinks I made him love me, that I seduced him just like Olivia did. You lied to me about everything.
Not everything, I try to say, but he doesn't want to hear it. He drops the knife from my throat.
I don't want to hear anything else.
His eyes are like stone, rimmed with hatred for what I am. Mine are pleading for forgiveness. But it's too late for that. I killed his brother. There is nothing more to say. I have made myself his enemy, and now he recoils from me. And just as the beam of light from the lighthouse passes over his face, he turns away, the rain slamming against his back, and ducks through the door into the lighthouse. His shadow moves through the lantern room and disappears down the stairway. He doesn't love you, Hazel, Olivia says, as if to console me. He loved what he thought you were, but you've been lying to him.
This is your fault. You did this.
No, you did this. You thought you could be one of them. Human. But we've been dead for 200 years. Nothing will change that. Not even a boy you think you love. How the hell would you know? You've never really loved anyone in your whole life. Only yourself. I don't want to be miserable like you, stuck in that harbor for eternity. You can't change what we are. Watch me, I say, and I push away from the wall and dart back into the lighthouse. Where are you going? She shouts after me.
I'm going after him.
Chapter 22. The bonfire outside the greenhouse is a smoldering heap of coals, unable to survive in this downpour, and everyone who had come to the island for the summer solstice is now gone, a party cut short by the return of Gigi Klein. The shadow of Beau is already headed down the path to the dock, and the wind and rain between us makes it seem like he's miles away, a mirage on a desert highway. I open my mouth to yell down to him, but then clamp my lips closed. He won't stop, anyway. He's determined to leave this island, and me, for good. So I start to run. At the dock, the cluster of boats and dinghies that had been clotted together only a few hours earlier are now all gone. Only the skiff and the sailboat remain, thumping against the sides of the dock, the wind battering down on them like an angry fist. Out on the water, several lights sweep through the dark, still searching for Gigi, unable to locate her, while the others must have given up and returned to the marina. She might still be out there somewhere, hidden, midnight inching closer. Or maybe she's already gone beneath the waves, Aurora dissolving back into the deepest dark of the harbor. But if I know my sister, she will find a way back to shore so she can wait out the last few minutes until midnight, savor these fleeting moments until she has to return to the brutal sea. And Marguerite will do the same. Maybe she will stay atop the lighthouse, staring out over the island, watching the storm push inland over the Pacific until she's forced down to the water's edge in the final seconds. Beau is not in the skiff, so I scan the sailboat. He appears near the front starboard side, throwing the moor lines. Where are you going? I shout up at him, just as he tosses the last bow line. But he doesn't answer me.
Don't leave like this, I plead. I want to tell you the truth, tell you everything.
It's too late, he replies.
The auxiliary motor rumbles softly, and he walks to the steering wheel at the stern of the sailboat. It sounds just like I remember from 3 years ago. A gentle sputter, the wind aching to push against the sails once the boat reaches the open ocean and can grasp the Pacific winds.
Please,
I beg, but the boat begins to drift forward from the dock. I follow it until there is no more dock, and then I don't have a choice. 2 feet separate me from the stern of the sailboat where the blue script letters painted on the back read Windsong. 3 feet. 4. I jump, my legs catapulting me forward, but I fall just short. My chest slams against the side, pain lancing across my ribs,
and my hands scramble for something to keep from falling into the water. I find a metal cleat and wrap my fingers around it, but it's slick, and my fingers start to give way. Seawater splashes up against the backs of my legs. Then Beau's hands tighten around my arms and pull me upward onto the boat. I gasp, touching my left side with my palm, pain shooting through my ribs with each deep breath. Beau is only inches away, still holding onto my right arm, and I look up into his eyes, hoping he sees me, the girl inside, the girl he's known these last few weeks. But then he releases my arm and turns away, back to the helm of the sailboat.
"You shouldn't have done that," he says.
"I just need to talk to you.
There's nothing else you can say."
He steers the boat not toward the marina, but out to sea, straight into the storm. "You're not going to town?"
"No."
"You're stealing a sailboat?"
"Borrowing it. Just until I get to the next harbor of the coast. I don't want to see that cursed fucking town ever again."
I press my fingers to my ribs again and wince. They're bruised, maybe cracked. The sailboat heaves to the side, the wind fighting us, but I shuffle to where Beau is holding tight to the steering wheel, maneuvering us right out into the heart of the storm. The tide swells. Waves crash over the bow, then spill on the sides. We shouldn't be out in this. "Beau," I say, and he actually looks at me. "I need you to know." My body shakes from the cold, from the knowing that I'm about to lose everything I thought I had. "I didn't force you to care about me. I didn't trick you into loving me. Whatever you felt for me was real." I say it in the past tense, knowing that whatever he felt is probably now gone. "I'm not the monster you think I am."
"You killed my brother."
His gaze peels me open, severs me in half, crushes me down to nothing.
"You fucking killed him, and you lied to me."
This I can't make right. There's nothing that can change it. It's unforgivable.
"I know."
Another wave slams into us, and I grab onto Beau instinctively, then let him go just as quickly.
"Why did you do it?"
he asks. I'm not sure if he's asking about his brother, or asking why I lied about who I am. Probably both. And the answers are tied up in each other. "This town took everything from me," I say, blinking away the water on my lashes. "My life. The person I once loved. I was angry. No, I was more than angry. I wanted them to pay for what they did to me. I took your brother into the harbor like I've taken so many boys over the years. I was numb. I didn't care whose life I stole or how many people suffered." I grip the wood helm beside the steering wheel to keep from being thrown sideways by another wave. The storm is going to kill us both. But I keep talking. This might be the last chance I get to make Beau understand. This summer, when I took Penny's body for the third time, I awoke in her bed just like the last 2 years. But this time, a new memory rested in her mind. A memory of you from the night before. She was already falling for you. She saw something that made her trust you. But I was in her body now, and you were on the island. The boy she brought across the harbor and let stay in the cottage. And for some reason, I trusted you too. It was the first time I've trusted anyone in 200 years. I brush away a stream of tears with the back of my hand. I could have killed you. I could have drowned you that first day. But for some reason, I wanted to protect you, keep you safe. I wanted to feel something again for someone. For you. I needed to know that my heart wasn't completely dead. That a part of me was still human. Could still fall in love. Rain and seawater spill over the hard features of his face. He's listening. even if he doesn't want to. No one should exist for as long as I have, I say. Only getting small glimpses of a real life each summer, tormented by dark waking dreams the rest of the time. I've spent most of my 200 years down there, at the bottom of the sea. A spook. An apparition moving with the tide, waiting to breathe air again. I can't go back there. Not alive, not dead. A phantom trapped as the months tick by. Every hour, every second. So you'd keep this body forever? He asks, squinting into the storm as we near the end of the cape and chug out into the open water. I'm not sure what I want now. But you stole it, he answers sharply. It's not yours. I know. There is no justification for wanting to keep this body. It's selfish, and it's murder. I would be killing the real Penny Talbot, tamping her down as if she never existed at all. I wanted to believe I was a different person because of Beau, because I haven't killed this summer. But I'm no different from who I've been for the last 200 years. I want something I can't have. I am a thief of souls and bodies. But when will I stop? When will my torment on this town be enough? My revenge satiated? Penny deserves a full life. Doesn't she? The life I never got to have. And in a burst of realization, I know. I can't take it from her. All my thoughts surface at once, a deluge of memories. They snap like little firecrackers in my mind, explosions along every nerve ending. I can fix this, remedy the injustices, give Beau what he wants. I've only been on the sailboat once before, I tell him. He frowns at me, not sure what I'm talking about. The first summer that I took Penny's body, her father was suspicious of me. He figured out what I was. I think that's why he collected all those books in your cottage. He was trying to find a way to get rid of me without killing his daughter. The same thing you were searching for, except he found a way. Beau turns the boat south down the coastline, and the wind shifts direction too, hitting us from the starboard side. That summer, I continue, he left the house one night after dinner and walked down to the dock. I followed him. He said he was taking the sailboat out and asked if I wanted to go along. Something didn't seem right. He seemed off, anxious. But I went because that's what Penny would have done. And I was pretending to be her for the first time. We didn't get very far out, just past the cape, when he told me the truth. He said that he knew what I was, a Swan sister, and that he was giving me a choice. He found a way to kill me without destroying the body I inhabited, Penny's body. He had discovered it in one of his books, but it involved sacrifice. I draw in a shallow breath, locating the words lodged at the base of my throat. If I jumped into the sea, I say, trying to steady my voice, and drowned again, like I did 200 years ago, I would die. But Penny would not. I had to repeat my death. And he believed it would also kill my sisters, effectively breaking our curse. We would never return to the town of Sparrow again. Beau tilts his head to look at me, his hands white-knuckled and braced around the steering wheel, fighting to keep us from being blown to shore, capsized completely.
But you didn't do it?
I shake my head. And then he asks what I knew was coming.
What happened to Penny's father?
I thought he was going to push me overboard, force me to do it. He came toward me, so I grabbed the mooring hook and I struck him with it. He wobbled for a minute, off balance as the boat rolled with each wave. I choke back the memory. I still wish I could go back and undo what happened that night, because Penny lost her father, and her mom lost her husband. He went over the side. and he never came back up to the surface again. I look out at the sea, midnight blue, churning and pockmarked with rain, and I picture him sucking in water, drowning just like I did so many years ago. There was a book sitting on the deck of the boat, the one where he had read how to break our curse, so I threw it overboard. I didn't want anyone else finding out how to kill us. I had watched it sink into the dark, having no idea that there was an entire cottage filled with books he had collected. The boat had slowly been drifting toward shore, I explain. The sails were down, thankfully, and the motor still running. So I steered it away from the rocks and somehow made it back to the island. I tied it to the dock and crept back up to the house. And there it has sat, until now.
"Why are you telling me this?" Beau asks.
"Because I know what I need to do now. I should have done it that night. I should have changed the course of everything. Then your brother would still be alive, and you never would have come here. I was selfish then, and a coward. But I'm not anymore."
"What are you talking about?"
He releases one hand from the steering wheel. "I'm going to give you what you want. Your revenge." I turn away from him and walk to the starboard side of the sailboat, facing out to sea. My grave. The place where I belong. Lives have been lost. Deaths counted. It started with my sisters and me when we were drowned in the harbor all those years ago. But we have caused more suffering than can ever be measured.
"What are you doing?"
Beau's voice is still hard, but I sense a hint of uncertainty in it. "I wanted to stay in this body and live this life, with you. But now, I know that I can't, for so many reasons. You will never be able to love me knowing what I've done, who I am. I'm sorry for your brother. I wish I could take it back. I wish I could take back most of the things I've done. But at least now I can end it. Make right this wrong." I close my eyes briefly, drawing gulps of air into my lungs.
"Penny," he says,
a name that isn't mine. He steps away from the wheel, the motor still rumbling, the sailboat crashing through the waves without a captain to pilot it. He doesn't touch me, but he stands in front of me, rocking side to side with the heaving sailboat.
"Hazel,"
he tries instead, but there is still the burning of anger in his voice.
"You ruined my life. You took my brother from me. And then I fell in love with you. I fell in love with the person who killed him. How am I supposed to deal with that? What do you want me to say? That I forgive you? Because I can't."
His eyes waver away from me. "He can't forgive. He never will. I can see the struggle in him. He feels like he should try to stop me, but a part of him, a bitter, vengeful part of him, also wants me dead. I know you can't forgive me," I say. "I know I hurt you. I ruined everything. I wish it were different. I wish I were different. But..." I choke down on the words I need to say. "But I did love you. That was real. Everything between us was real. I love you still." I hope to see a glimmer of something in his eyes. Recognition that a part of him still loves me too. But he can't see through what he now knows I am. I am only the girl who drowned his brother. That's all. When he doesn't speak, I glance over to the steering wheel, where a small clock is mounted to the dash. 11:48. Only 12 minutes left until midnight. And then it'll be too late. I can't stay in this body. Not now. I can't steal another life. But if I plunge into that icy sea, if I don't allow my soul to escape, but instead let this body drown with me inside, I will be the one to die. Not Penny. I will drown just like I did 2 centuries ago. And hopefully, if Penny's father was right, she will survive. In years past, when we've returned to the sea, I explain, the wind blowing my hair straight out behind me, we leave the bodies we've stolen before the clock reaches midnight. But I think, for this to work, Penny's body has to drown with me inside it. I will die, but she can be brought back. You will have to save her. I will be gone, but she can live. He looks through me, like he doesn't want to believe what I'm saying. I turn toward the railing, the sea spraying my face, the dark sky like a funeral. This will be my last breath, my last glimpse of the life I could have had. I close my eyes, knowing I can't turn back. But then Beau's hand grabs me, spinning me around to face him. "No," he says. His eyebrows are tugged together, lips cut flat. There's torment in him. He doesn't know what to feel, what to do. And this is why I'm taking the decision away from him. I'm ending this once and for all so he doesn't have to. He speaks anyway, says what he thinks he should. It doesn't have to end like this. I smile a little, shaking my head. You know there's no other way. My sisters will just keep on killing, and I don't want to go back into the sea for another 200 years. I can't. It's not a life. And I'm tired. He slides his hands up to my cheeks and into my soaking wet hair. And even though there is love in his eyes, a pain that I recognize, there is also hate. Deep, undeniable, entrenched hate. I took his brother from him. And there's no going back from that. But even with loathing in his dark green eyes, which still remind me of the place where the sea meets the sky after a storm, he pulls me to him, pressing his warm lips to mine as the rain continues to fall between us. He kisses me like he won't let me go, even though I know he will. Desperate and angry, loving me and hating me. And his fingers pull against my hair, drawing me even closer. My fingernails dig into his chest, trying to hold tight to this moment, this feeling. I could take him with me, like both Olivia and Aurora suggested. I could drown him now, and he would be trapped in the sea with me for eternity. But I don't want him like that, confined to a watery prison. It isn't real. And he doesn't deserve it. His lips lift only an inch away from mine, and I draw in a tight breath of air. Thank you for giving me these days with you, I say. Tears push forward, and I don't try to stop them. I close my eyes and rest my forehead against his chest, breathing him in, wanting to remember his scent forever. But right now, he just smells like the sea. A boy drifted in on the tide, like a dream, like a memory I hope I'll never forget. I drop my hands from his chest, turning to look out at the ocean, wild and turbulent, the bottomless black Pacific beckoning me into its cold interior. It's nearly midnight, and lightning spiders against the clouds in the distance, drawing closer. When I jump in, I say to Beau over the crashing waves and wind. After I've drowned, you need to pull her body back out. He doesn't nod. No response. He can't comprehend what's happening. But he knows he has to let me go. I meet his forest green eyes for the first time, seeing myself reflected back in them. Don't tell her what happened to her father, I say. Don't tell her about me. I think it's better if she doesn't know. Thunder snaps down from the sky. He nods. I will leave the good memories inside Penny's mind, and I will take the bad ones with me. She will remember images of Beau, of his warmth beside her in the cottage, of his hands on her skin, his lips on hers. She will remember days when her heart felt about to burst with love for him. She won't recall going to the cemetery to say goodbye to Owen. She won't remember speaking to Marguerite in front of the old perfumery. She won't remember talking to Gigi Klein as if she were her sister. She will only recall that she provided sanctuary for Gigi from the boys who had been hunting her. She will live the life I wish I could have. She will miss her father. But sometimes, missing is better than knowing. I will give her the gift of good memories. The gift of Beau, the last boy I loved. The boy I love still. I step over the wire railing. The deck is slippery, and I almost lose my footing. My heart begins to pound, fear and doubt seizing me. My fingers grip so tightly to the railing that they begin to throb. I don't take my gaze off him. I told you that love is like falling, like drowning. This will be the same. I just have to let go. My lips quiver. Don't forget me. Never, he answers, and his face is the last thing I see before I jump over the side and hit the water, and everything turns black. The world is instantly made silent. The storm churns and crashes above the waterline. But down here, everything is calm and quiet. I swim hard. I pull myself into the deep, closer to the bottom of the sea. The cold turns my hands and feet numb almost immediately. The cold that will slow my heart and preserve Penny's body. The darkness is absolute, blotting out the surface of the ocean so that I can't tell which way is up. But I don't want to change my mind. I don't want any chance of swimming back up and sucking in a breath of air. I plummet like a coin sinking down to the pirate wreckage in the harbor. I think about the penny I tossed into the water the night with Beau and Rose and Heath. We each made wishes, some tangible, some likely not. My wish was to be human again, to live a normal life. But it didn't come true. I fall deeper, darker, colder. But maybe this, what I'm doing right now, is the most human I've ever been. To die. To sacrifice yourself so others don't have to. To make a choice. And I fell in love. What's more human than that? The cold seizes my extremities so that I can no longer move my fingers and toes, arms and legs. And the dark makes shapes that I know aren't really there. Death plays tricks on me. I think I see my reflection in the water, which is impossible. But there are two images, Penny's face and mine, masked deep beneath her skin, the real reflection of me, Hazel Swan. Dark hair, wide green eyes, lost, alone, but not really alone. I've known love, deep, foolish love, and that has made it all worth it. I squeeze my eyes closed. I open my mouth, gulping down the sea. It tastes like salt and absolution, like letting go. And then, drawing inward from the cold, is massive warmth. My body is no longer numb. It feels like I'm lying in a hollow of beach grass under an afternoon sun, watching clouds bounce lazily across the sky. The warmth is so real that I open my eyes again. And then I'm swallowed by it. Penny Talbot. I have forgotten the day, the hour, but I feel bitterly cold, and I draw in a breath like it's the last and the first. My ribs ache. Arms around me, tugging me onto a boat. The wind racks my ears. The rain makes me shiver. I'm huddled at the stern, a blanket over my shoulders. Where am I? I ask, and a faint voice shouts over me, words I can't seem to understand. The dark sky spins above me, the dock beneath my feet, the long march up the walkway, and then the cottage I haven't been inside of in years. A fire starting low and then growing warm and bright. I sit on the floor, books everywhere. Again, a voice and a face I don't recognize brings me hot tea, and I drink it carefully, warming my insides. How did I get here? Everything is a dream I'm not sure I want to remember. But then I do remember. The boy crouched beside me, his face. I do know him. From the marina, looking for work. And then the party on the beach. He saved me from Lon Whittemer, who tried to pull me into the water. And then we sat beside the bonfire and talked. His name is Beau. He's cute. And the singing from the harbor chased us all the way back to the island. I told him he could stay here in the cottage, that it'd give him work for the summer. And here he is, drenched, worry lines punctuating his face. Did the singing stop? I ask.
The what?
He says. The Swan Sisters, the singing. Have they all returned yet? He pauses for a moment, his expression pulling at the edges of the scar by his left eye. Where did he come from? I wonder. There is kindness in his eyes. But he shouldn't be here in Sparrow. It's too risky.
Yeah, he finally answers. The singing stopped. And I don't think we'll ever hear it again.
I fall asleep on his couch, a blanket tucked over my shoulders. And each time I open my eyes, he's still awake, staring into the fire like he's looking for something, or waiting for someone.
What happened to me?
I ask as dawn inches through the windows. He turns around, sorrow scribed into the features of his face. The coolness of morning slips through the cracks in the doorway, making me shiver even with the fire roaring behind him. He squints at me, like it pains him just to look at me. A deep, wretched heartache. But I'm not sure why.
You've been asleep for a while, he tells me. Now you're awake.
I look down at my hands, curled together in front of me. On my left index finger is a pink scar, nearly healed. At least a week or two old. But I don't recall how I got it. I can't seem to find the memory in the trenches of my mind. So I tuck my hands back inside the blanket and push the thought away. I know there is more meaning in his answer than what he's willing to reveal. But my head still feels foggy, my body wanting to drag me back into my dreams. So I ask one more question before I drift off. What happened to you?
I lost someone I loved.
The harbor. Some places are bound in by magic, ensnared by it. The town of Sparrow may have possessed slivers of magic long before the Swan Sisters arrived in 1822. Or maybe the three sisters brought it with them across the Pacific. No one would ever know for sure. Their beauty and unluckiness may have been its own kind of spell, spun together in a rugged place like Sparrow, Oregon, where gold washed down from the mountains and the sea pulled ships under when the moon was full and the tide vengeful. Magic is a tricky thing, not easily measured or metered or weighed. Even though the Swan Sisters will never again return to torment the small town, their enchantment still resides in the sodden streets and the angry winter winds. The morning after the summer solstice, a local fisherman steered his boat out into the harbor in search of crabs rolling along the seafloor. The tourists had begun their exodus from the bed and breakfasts, loading into cars and boarding buses, returning home. The swan season had ended, but what the tourists and locals didn't yet know was that there would never again be another drowning in the town of Sparrow. Olivia Green would wake the following morning atop the lighthouse on Lumiere Island. She would recall only fragments of the party the night before and assume she drank too much and passed out on the cold stone floor, her friends having abandoned her. Gigi Klein, who had been missing for several weeks but reappeared unexpectedly at the summer solstice party, would wake up on the rocky shore of Lumiere Island, her feet halfway submerged in the water, and three toes swollen and frostbitten, unable to be saved. After having fled into the harbor the night before, Aurora circled back around to the shore, easily evading capture from the mob of mostly drunk Sparrow High students. She was watching the boats drift farther away, her arms hugging her chest, soaking wet, about to slip back into the water and relinquish the body she had stolen, when she collapsed right there on the rocks. Neither Aurora nor Marguerite Swan ever made it back into the water, because at 11:54, their sister Hazel Swan dove into the sea and drowned herself, severing the 2-century-long curse in a single act of sacrifice. Aurora and Marguerite vanished from their stolen bodies, like a wisp of sea air, a rivulet of smoke finally extinguished for good. But still, unknowingly, the following morning, a local fisherman navigated his boat among the wreckage of sunken ships, drifting over the very spot where the 3 Swan sisters had been drowned 200 years ago. And in that place, bubbles rose up to the surface, usually caused by crabs knotted together, moving among the silty bottom. But not this time, not this morning. What he saw was something else. 3 bodies, dressed in gossamer white gowns that clung to their ashen skin, drifted together with the current. He pulled them aboard his boat, unaware of what he had just discovered. They were not skeletons, not chewed apart by fish and salt water. It was as if they had been drowned that very morning. The Swan sisters' bodies had finally been recovered. And when they were carried ashore and laid on the dock in Sparrow, people gasped. Children cried, and women cut off locks of the sisters' hair for good luck. They were beautiful, more stunning than anyone had ever imagined, more angelic than any portrait or story had ever described. The curse of the Swan sisters had been broken. It took several days for the locals to decide what should be done with the perfectly preserved bodies. But eventually, they were buried in Sparrow Cemetery atop Alder Hill, overlooking the bay. It was only fitting. People still come to take pictures beside their gravestones, even though the swan season has never returned. No songs whispered from the deep waters of the harbor. No bodies stolen for a brief few weeks in June. But there is one who comes to the cemetery every week. A boy who lost a brother, who fell in love and then let her slip into the sea. Beau Carter kneels down beside the grave of Hazel Swan. He brings flowers. He tells her stories about the island and the tide and the life they never had. He waits for the sun to set before he stands and walks back down Ocean Avenue to the docks. He still lives in the cottage on Lumiere Island. He is the keeper of the lighthouse. In the summer, he harvests apples and pears, bringing crates into town to sell. And during a storm, he takes the sailboat out alone past the cape to the open sea, battling the wind and the waves until the morning sunlight breaks over the horizon. But he is not alone on the island. Penny Talbot wanders the orchard rows with him. Her memories slowly returned in the days after the summer solstice, memories that were plucked just for her, only the good ones. On calm, sunny days, Beau teaches her how to sail. She eats forgetful cakes in the afternoons, gooseberry and cinnamon spice, brought to the island by Rose, who worries about her more than Penny can understand. Her mom bakes apple pies and fresh pear tarts. She hums while she works. She makes cups of tea and invites locals out to the island to foretell their futures. She watches her daughter, who is herself once again, and she knows she's lost many things. But she didn't lose Penny. Her mind settles. Her grief eases. She stacks smooth rocks beside the cliff overlooking the sea. A marker. A grave for the husband she lost. He belongs to the Pacific now, like so many others. In the evenings, Penny reads tea leaves at the kitchen table, blinking down at her future and her past, recalling something she once saw in their smudged remains. A boy blowing in from the sea. And she thinks that maybe her life has been predestined from the start. But even when they kiss between the apple trees, Bo seems caught in a memory, carried away to another time she can't see. And late at night, when he folds her in his arms beside the crackling fire and kisses the space just behind her ear, she knows he's falling in love with her. And maybe he's loved her long before this, long before he pulled her from the water on the night of the summer solstice, the night that is a blur in her memory. But she doesn't ask. She doesn't want to know about the before. Because she loves him now. With the wind seeping through the cracks in the cottage windows, Otis and Olga curled up at their feet, the world stretched out before them. They have eternity. Or even if it's just one life, one long, singular life, that's enough. Land and Sea. Graveyard of the Pacific. That's what locals call the waters off the coast of Sparrow. Not only because of the 100 or so shipwrecks dotting the seafloor, but because of all the lost souls drowned in the ocean over the last 2 centuries. Some days the sea is calm, lapping gently against the shores of Sparrow, seagulls diving among the rocks and tide pools in search of trapped fish. On these days, it's easy to forget the history of what happened here. But on stormy days, when the wind whips violently against the town and the tide rises over the sea walls, you can almost hear the song of the sisters blowing in from the deep, an echo of years past, the ocean unwilling to forget. When the sky is gray and mournful, and the fishermen push out beyond the cape through the fog, they will look up to the island and say a prayer, for good winds and full nets. They say a prayer to her, the girl they often see standing on the cliff's edge, the girl who was drowned long ago, but returned again and again, white gown catching in the wind. And during harvest and early spring, when the island smells sweet and bursting with sunlight, a figure can be seen wandering the rows, examining the trees. She is still there, an apparition caught in time, the ghost of a girl who lived longer than she ever should have, who dared to fall in love, who lingers still, not because of revenge, not because she's looking for atonement in the seams and shadows of the town, but because this is where she belongs, rooted where she first came ashore 2 centuries ago. This land is hers, damp and moss green and salt winds. She is made of these things, and they are made of her, the same sinew and string. Death cannot strip her of this place. She belongs where the land meets the sea. She belongs with him. In those quiet moments when she stirs the new spring leaves on the apple trees, when she watches Bo moving down the rows, his eyes bent away from the afternoon sun, his hands rough with the soil, she leans in close. So close she can recall the warmth of his skin, his hands against her flesh, and she whispers against his ear, "I love you still." And when he feels the wind flutter against his neck, the scent of rose water and myrrh in the air, a hush sailing over him like a memory he can't shake. He knows. And he smiles. This has been an Audible Studios production of The Wicked Deep, written by Shay Earnshaw, performed by Casey Turner, executive producer Laura Gatchko and Mike Charzik, producer Neil Basic. Copyright 2018 by Shay Earnshaw. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.